All right, we're here. Me and my man, DJ Madness, in the house, and we're here on another day here. Another nice day, another nice world. I'm trying to see if I can get some background music going on. There we go. Just try that. All right, well, anyway, we're here today talking about reparations, I think. And we just started kicking off the discussion. A little informal discussion today. Nothing really too heavy, I don't think, right? I don't know. Mm-hmm. We'll just see where it goes and... Where'd you want to start, Mike? Go ahead and start, man. We're talking about reparations for whom? Well, we're speaking of reparations, we're talking about reparations for a specific group of people. We're talking about reparations for those that were actually had to endure the slavery experience, mm-hmm. and those who are descendants of it.
Right.
Based primarily on lineage and things like that, the family tree. Because we're still being deprived any sort of entitlement mm-hmm. to achieve any kind of equity in American society. And, you know, mm-hmm. I'm not going to even touch on the global aspect of it because we're being mistreated all around the world. Mm-hmm. Mainly from the position of, you know, black first. I'm not talking about, you know, people of color. I'm talking about black, you know, so-called black.
I can attest for that, and I've done a little history searching myself, gotten far back as my fourth great grandfather on my father's side. Was born in slavery, born in Virginia, and he did the cotton crop. He did the tobacco crop there. And mainly it was tobacco in that time. So 1800s, I'd say 1820 when he was born. I think I want to say 1912. I'm not exactly sure the date of his death, but you know, he spent most of his time in slavery. And of course, he was able to see freedom from slavery at that point in his life. So, and then my second great grandfather was also born in slavery. And this is all in, he migrated from Virginia to Mississippi, then finally into Texas. And a lot of our family, mostly my dad's side, settled in East Texas, Palestine, Waco, Terrell, Texas. You probably heard of those cities. Tyler, Texas.
Definitely.
Yeah, in those areas. And in some research during, I'd say around that time, there were some pretty bad skirmishes there, i.e. Race riots, as they call it. And it was, I'm sure it wasn't a race riot. It was a massacre. Oh, okay, and that was one side massacre.
So it was clear. You're telling me it was clear.
The book that came out, and I'm trying to remember the name of it. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
So it was clear who was the assailant and who was the victim in this, right?
Exactly. So you live under those conditions, and then you're free. Okay? So you're talking generational, even up to that point that you're free. And then when you're free, okay, what do you have to fall back on? Of course, they instituted laws, vagrancy laws, laws to put people in jail and to basically re-enslave them in jail. So my part of the family has been has seen that. Now, I'm not saying yes, I need to receive reparations, but you think about all of that. You come out of slavery, you're given nothing, and you had to pull yourself by your bootstraps when you have no boots. So I say that to throw those cliches in there to say some people had a hand up, you know, I mean, not to say I never had a hand up. I've had a hand up growing up. But some, my ancestors haven't. So they went through the hell to for me to be in a position I'm in now. You know, we served in the military. We served with honor. We served with honor. I'm going to say it like that. Because a lot of us served with honor and didn't get that honor when we came home after serving foreign in foreign lands, liberating other countries, liberating other people. When we come back, we're still in bondage. So, I'm just, you know, there's a lot to talk about this. There's so much behind this whole thing in reparations. And I firmly believe that we are owed something. Okay, and I'm not saying monetarily. And when you create a culture that's always against you, they're not going to jump up and say, okay, we're going to do right our wrongs. We're going to continue to live in lies. We're going to continue to discriminate. We're going to continue to live like nothing ever happened to a people and to enrich a country, supposedly the richest country in the world. So, all those people who made this country rich, the richest country in the world, and then didn't get paid for making us the richest country in the world. I firmly believe that richness needs to be kicked back to those people who brought this country to its greatness. So that's my little soliloquy, but I can speak from that part and, not to say that I don't want reparations. I want us to be actually free. We're not free. We're actually not free. Even though slavery was done in 1865, we're still not free. We're talking 150 some odd years ago, we're still not free. Because we're still fighting for the same things that we were fighting for back then. Still, 150 years later. So, now that's basically how I'm looking at it. So, yes, the question's asked to me, you believe in reparations? Hell yeah, I believe in reparations. I believe in that.
Well, a lot of it has to do with viewing this from a socioeconomic standpoint. There were land, thousands of acres of land that were just given and bestowed to people that did no work. They received what is categorized as unpaid labor.
They were given wealth.
Right.
They had land to create wealth with. They had a mule to till that earth and to create crops to take to market to create wealth. So think about that. A lot of people will say, well, I wasn't given that. Well, you are an example of that. You know, you look back and see, look at your lineage, how you got to where you are now. You know, however, there's been immigrants along the way. So not to say that every white person that comes here, that's here, gained their wealth this way, but guaranteed you were a benefit of that. You had that benefit of that wealth because you got to where you are now and you're one of the richest people in the world. How do you think you got there? And it wasn't by hard work, believe me. It wasn't.
Right. It has to do with a system that was conceived and that was built for a specific progress and a specific way to
exactly
place them in a position of power and dominance and control.
Exactly.
And when you're here with less than nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And they expect for you to climb with little resources. There's not any way around it than to think that this was purposely contrived and to create a class structure and system of haves beyond haves and have-nots.
Yeah.
And in the process, some immigrants after 1965, were able to actually come in here and undermine the position of those that are black, that are born of this soil.
That's right.
That's primarily the issue when you're talking about the immigration issue to bring that The reason for us to be an exclusive and exceptional group, because that's the thing about us as a group. The problem is we're not cohesive enough.
No.
We are constantly looking out for others' interests instead of our own. But when we look out for our own interests, we're castigated.
Oh, yeah. Well, look what happened. Look what happened to the Black Panthers. Look what happened to Dr. King. Look what happened to Malcolm X. All those people who were for Black empowerment, they were either ostracized or killed. And to end that movement, because there was a buildup. That's what, why they came out, why they were doing what they were doing. There was a movement, and that brought a lot of people with them. And then you have
the government targeted such groups by COINTELPRO.
You remember? I don't know if you remember. There was it was a congressional, or was that the Senate or congressional hearing for Jeff Sessions. You remember, I forgot that sister's name. She asked him about, is there an investigation on Black extremist groups? And, you know, he could not answer that question. Were there Black extremist groups? Now she asked also, was there any white extremist groups that they were investigating? Okay. But their focus was the Black extremist groups. You know why that was asked?
Right. Let me pull this up for you. Let me just pull this minute and a half up.
Hopefully I'm accurate about it, because I remember sitting watching that hearing.
Right.
And you know, he had no answers. Oh, I never heard it. I don't know about that report.
Not for project management tool called Mutt.
Yeah. I'm sure you probably pull it up, but it was something that was very telling about this guy. And you know, he's got a history as well.
Oh, definitely. Let me get through the ads right here. Oh, here we go.
Yeah. He's definitely got a history.
Meetings, nor do I recall any conversations with any Russian officials at the Mayflower Hotel. I do not have any recollection. I do not remember it. I did not remember that. If I had remembered it, or if it actually occurred, which I don't remember that it
So he didn't. He has trouble with his recollection.
I don't recall. the things he don't want you to know, he has a hard time recollecting. But if it was something that applied to him, yes, I know, I remember, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, you can remember that, but you can't remember all this other stuff. So, you know, he was a walking contradiction anyway. So, you know, I didn't think he was going to last anyway. You know, Trump had him on a very short leash. And then soon as he recused himself, you know, he was Trump's worst enemy pretty much. So he dogged him every day he was in office. So.
All right, here we go. Here we go right here.
It was something.
Here. Between 1956 and 1971, the FBI ran a counterintelligence program named COINTELPRO that was initiated by J. Edgar Hoover. COINTELPRO mainly targeted civil rights leaders such as Martin Luther King, and it's commonly understood that this was an abuse of its surveillance power in a manner to suppress a peaceful movement. So I would like to ask Mr. Chair unanimous consent to enter this report into the record, which is Black identity extremists likely motivated to target law enforcement officers. I believe earlier you said you were not familiar with the report. Is that correct?
Well, I haven't read it. I know some of the alleged targeting of officers.
I would like to know, and I'll ask you about that in a minute. So you are somewhat familiar with it. Who had the power in your department to order a report like this?
I'm not sure how that report got ordered. I don't believe I explicitly approved it or directed it.
Okay, so you haven't necessarily read the report, but you are familiar with the term Black identity extremists?
Well, I think so, yes.
So can you tell me what that term means to you? Do you believe that there is a movement of African Americans that identify themselves as Black identity extremists, and what does that movement do?
Well, it'd be interesting to see the conclusions of that report. But I'm aware that there are groups that do have an extraordinary commitment to their racial identity, and some have transformed themselves even into violent activists.
Now, what he's doing here is he's casting and spreading paranoia, in my view. The thing of it is, this is a prolongation of what was, well, before the COINTELPRO, in addition to more recent years, the Patriot Act.
Yeah.
They created this BIE to keep people like, well, I'll say it for myself, keep people like me and others that are speaking mainly truth to power, limited, restricted on what they could talk about on the internet. That's simply what it is. So they're spreading this paranoia, and they created this report. And there's even report done by FBI. I believe it was in 2016 that stressed the amount of white extremist groups that were infiltrating law enforcement all throughout the country. And I'm sure he would deny that as well. All right, here we go. Let me play some more of it. It's only about 5 minutes, 4 minutes to go.
You're aware of white organizations that do this as well? Given that white supremacy is well-documented, well-researched movements such as the neo-Nazis, the Ku Klux Klan, et cetera, are they white identity extremists?
I didn't follow that question, please, again.
Is there a term or a report on white identity extremists? You mentioned...
Now she's holding his feet to the fire right now, right? She's asked the question. Is there a term, white identity extremists, right? And watch how this song and dance goes.
You are familiar with black people who identify with their racial identity.
Yes, but it's not coming to me at this moment.
Not coming to you?
It's
certainly a group such as the Ku Klux Klan.
Yes, and then the skinhead movements, but there's a racial identity, white movements, that have been identified for sure.
So has the FBI done a report on white identity extremists that are likely motivated to target law enforcement officers?
I'm not aware of that.
Okay. Are you aware of a group called the Sovereign Citizens?
I've heard that group, yes.
And I believe that the Sovereign Citizens is primarily a white organization that absolutely has targeted police officers and killed police officers. You're not aware of that?
I'm not aware of all their crimes, but I know they are a group that's known to have violent tendencies.
Could you name an African-American organization that have committed violent acts against police officers? Could you name one today? In this report, they name organizations from 30, 40 years ago, but can you name of one today that has targeted police officers in a violent manner?
I believe I could, but I would want to be to confirm that and submit it to you in writing. But I believe we had, within the last year or so, 4 police officers killed by a group that some have described as extremist.
So what has happened is that there have been a couple of incidents in which African-Americans did kill police officers who were not associated with a black organization. So one, for example, in Baton Rouge was associated with Sovereign Citizens, which is primarily a white group. So you should know that there's a lot of concern in the community, especially from organizations such as Black Lives Matter. By the way, would you consider Black Lives Matter a black identity extremist group?
I'm not able to comment on that. I have not so declared it.
So you should know that a lot of activists around the country are very concerned that we're getting ready to repeat a very sad chapter of our history, where people who are rightfully protesting what they consider to be an injustice in their community, which is their relationship with police officers, are now being targeted and labeled as extremists and are going through periods of surveillance and harassment. And so I would like to know, what is your department going to do to protect the rights of average citizens to protest if they have a concern about police officers?
This department will not unlawfully target people.
So if that's the case, then I would ask that you review this report, Black Identity Extremists Likely Motivated to Target Law Enforcement Officers, because I personally don't believe that any such organizations exist. The organizations that are referred to in this report are organizations from decades ago. And so I would like to know, what will you do to essentially roll back what is listed in this report? Because it's not...
Which I downloaded a copy of that, by the way.
Yeah. Accurate.
Yeah. He's He's going
to. We will look at the report. I actually would be interested in reading it. But they usually do an excellent job, objective and fair, on those kind of reports.
Okay, well, just.
Time of the gentlewoman has expired.
Of course.
Oh, yeah. That was from PBS, by the way. Just saw it. Yeah. Baseball copy or nothing, but from PBS.
Yeah. I guarantee you he didn't.
More or less open source. Anyone could get it. So.
I guarantee you he didn't read that report.
Oh, no, man. You kidding me?
Comment on it. Well, so.
Well, sometime after that, he's no longer in office now, right?
He was there for a little while to do that. So
but
I doubt if he did because his focus was not.
My point being is that he didn't redact anything.
Right.
He didn't take anything back.
Right.
Because a time after that, he left office. He left his position.
Yeah.
So now we're stuck with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
I say we because.
And no one will go back on that to verify that.
Yeah, that's my point exactly.
That's how you, unless somebody asks that question again.
So my point exactly.
Maybe so, another congressional hearing since Sessions is gone. How about your new attorney general? Follow up on that.
You would think, but there's nothing. There's nobody in position to do that. There's certainly not the Congressional Black Caucus. I mean, I'm not slamming all of them, but what has the Congressional Black Caucus done specifically for the black condition, black conditions, and descendants of slaves in this country? I mean. Some people will argue about that term, descendants of slaves, by the way, but I'll get into that a little bit later. But about CBC, what group actually do we have to advocate for our own best interests right now? You know what I mean? Is what I'm saying. If this
political group, or are we talking a political group?
Well, we're talking about lobbyists. We're talking about political group. We're talking about social advocacy groups. If this were a, let's just say, hypothetically speaking, if this were a paper or documentation written for Hasidic Jews, let's just say, right? Then the ADL will be all over it.
Right.
Or the JDL, Jewish Defense League, one of their own organizations that's quote unquote on code, would actually have something to say about that. And I'm sure a report, either the verbiage or the existence of the report itself would cease.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and now that you say that, other than the Congressional Black Caucus, who would advocate for something like that?
No one.
Who would be in a position to do that? Like you say, lobbyists, a lobbyist Congress and the Senate and things like that. Like you say, money makes everything move. So,
right,
you got no money, you don't get much done.
Yeah, that's the problem. We have to divest and divert towards an effort to, towards progress, towards getting, towards improving our condition and basically achieving redress and recourse.
Right.
That's where we are. We're nowhere. We haven't gone. What strides have we made since 1865? Since some paperwork was signed, you tell me what strides were made. Affirmative action.
Definitely. Well, we had a few amendments, but no. You had some amendments. You had amendments that were kind of in that direction, but you always have someone to counter that. What I mean?
And it's come to my attention that a good measure. Of a number of things that were instituted supposedly for our benefit are executive orders.
Yeah, which don't last until
which can be overturned, removed, redacted.
Exactly.
Can be removed or what's the word I'm trying to find? Anyway, they can be taken off the set. That's what I'm saying. So the thing is,
nothing lasting like laws.
Right.
Like
even the treaties,
something like that.
Treaties and doctrines. I mean, even treaties and doctrines can be broken. I mean, like I alluded to earlier with regard to reparations and the 1866 Indian treaties, there were five civilized tribes, recognized civilized tribes, among which also held slaves, until they had to be told to release the slaves after 1865.
So they weren't going to let them go, even though the Emancipation Proclamation.
They didn't. Cherokees held slaves for well after 1865.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, there were slaves in the United States, in this country, up until the 1960s.
I believe that.
Sharecroppers.
Yeah. Yeah.
That the institution lasted well into the 60s.
I had family in East Texas, man, with sharecroppers. I mean, I was very young, but, you know, I learned that. I learned, you know, that's just on my dad. And I haven't even really dove into on my mother's side because there's a whole other dynamic there. You know, they came from West Texas, Oklahoma, from that area.
So northern and West Texas?
Yes. Yeah. Matter of fact, my dad's father ended up settling in Amarillo.
Okay.
Texas, and I never got a chance to meet him. My youngest brother and my other brother, they went to his funeral. That was the first time they saw him.
Wow.
That was my dad's father. Wow. Never met him. So, and he had a whole another family there, you know, in Amarillo.
Right. And
so there's a whole side of family I don't even know about, you know, and that's on my dad's side as well. Now my mother's side has got people, you know, mid Austin, San Antonio, Brenham, those places, little small towns.
Okay,
still living in those small towns.
Let me stop you there at Brenham. Let me stop you there at Brenham. Okay. Because I'm about to blow your mind about this.
Blow it up. I'm thinking about Hempstead after you're done. You already know what happened to Hempstead, right?
No, you can run across me, but
you know what happened there.
You know I'm operating here. I'm operating here with a stage name, right? However,
go ahead, bro.
My government last name is extensively in Brenham.
Brenham, okay. My dad taught there. He taught high school in Brenham, Brookshire, Sealy. I mean, he jumped around a bunch of different schools and Prairie View.
We'll have to talk about that offline.
Yeah. All that area. Yeah.
Well, because I know where my government, quote unquote government last name actually originated, and it's in the Oklahoma area and extended down to Brenham and even parts of El Paso. So I'm
right.
It's quite possible that you and I might even be related, or
my mother's people were in Hempstead.
All right, tell me about Hempstead.
Hempstead, you know what happened recently in Hempstead, who we lost there in Hempstead. Sandra Bland.
Okay, I was gonna say that actually took place in Hempstead, right near Prairie View, right?
Prairie View, actually, right between Hempstead and Prairie View. My mother went to Prairie View. That's where she met my father. My father was teaching at Prairie View.
Oh my goodness.
So we were born in Hempstead. My other three siblings, we were all born in Hempstead. Then we moved to Houston when he got work in Houston, and then we grew up there.
Wow.
Now my knowledge of Hempstead is very limited because I grew up in Houston, but my mother's family was in Hempstead, and I learned through them, through her, and the few meetings we had with cousins and aunts and uncles, and her father. Who was her grandfather, because her father died in World War II. She was an only child. So she grew up knowing Papa Joe as her dad, which was her grandfather. And she grew up with her grandfather and grandmother.
I mean, how many Papa Joes are there in people's families?
Many Papa Joes in the U.S., man. Just in Texas, just in that area. Everybody's a Papa Joe, man. So Papa Joe, his first name was Joseph, you know, Joseph for short.
Say that part again.
His brother. Uh-huh.
Say that part Joseph, again. Joseph what now?
Joseph White.
Okay.
Joe White. They grew up as Whites. Now, this brother was whiter than the whitest white man. He was almost albino looking. And when I got to know him and learn about him, he was blind. But he knew us all. You know, your senses are heightened when you're blind. You can smell better. You can hear better.
That's right.
Your other senses enhance when you lose the sense. And that's what he did. So if we came around, he knew our scent. He knew how we sounded. And, you know, it was amazing. I mean, I walked right up to him. Michael, is that you? Come over here, boy. You know, and I was little then, you know, probably 6, 7 years old. But, you know, just it was amazing about him. And he was very talented, you know. And then, of course, being back then, being black and intelligent, ooh, don't let them know you're intelligent. Because you read, you know, if you're intelligent, then you're uppity back then. You're uppity.
That's true. That's true.
You don't want to show that you have more intelligence than them because they're gonna use that. You know. So
well, you were a threat.
Yeah, very much. Very much. Very much threat. So you know, I said, born there, grew up in Houston, South Side. Shout out South Park in the house, South Side, Jones High, MLK 610.
He clouded.
Got rip. Got rip the spot, you know.
Yeah. Rip.
So if any of y'all are here, any of y'all are on here, rapping South Park, baby. So, you know, and then even there, you know, you see the system. We all grew up in the system.
Right.
I.e. not the criminal justice system.
Right.
System that permeates us all here. And you see and you feel I'm trying to put the right word to it. You see and you feel, it's like it doesn't feel right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the way you sense it. You don't sense it.
You read in the books, everything's a white accomplishment.
Right.
Everything's a white accomplishment. Everything's a white invention. Everything's, and that tells me I am nothing.
Now,
where are the people that look who invented and created, and you didn't learn that in school.
Well, there wasn't a book in Texas, a book in Texas that identified slaves as indentured servants or something like that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I had that. Yes. You were indentured servants, but never set free. Because last I remember, if you're an indentured servant, you serve a certain amount of time as a slave, and then you're free.
Well, there was an even exchange, though. Yeah, and it was a certain predetermined period of time that you did serve.
Yeah,
and it was usually for a reason. It was for something tangible. Didn't involve any punishment. I mean, there was indentured servitude in Africa, for goodness sakes, in ancient.
Yeah, but it was a whole different. It was a whole different thing here for black people.
Yeah,
I mean, definitely. You know, it's totally different than that, and. We don't even know what indentured servitude is, to be honest with you. We don't know what that is. We only know slavery.
Well, so, yeah, right. And we only know what we're told.
We never experienced indentured servitude.
Oh, no.
So, and to say, you know, to me, you tell me, well, they had slaves in other places. That's to tell me. What is that to tell me? What are you telling me? Okay?
You're telling me
you don't give a fuck.
That, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's the first thing that comes to mind.
That then, part.
Yeah, you say something to fill in a space. You may as well just say nothing and don't give a commentary for something that you don't know about or even care about, you know? Don't show me you don't care.
What is telling you, when you have somebody that reacts like that, it's telling you to cope with it and not conquer it. I use that term a lot. Coping
and
stuff.
Get over it.
Yeah, we make a conscious decision to be unconscious and to cope instead of conquering it, because we don't want to upset the white guy. We don't want to upset the white person in the room.
That's just like being raped.
Truth.
Think about that.
Well,
being raped your whole life.
Well.
And then they come around and say, oh, you can just get over it. You know, you need to get over that. You need to move on with your life. You need this. It's just, you know, you should forget about it. Okay. Think about that.
Yep.
You know, we have a mind, and a mind can be damaged when certain events happen, i.e., let's say you saw your buddy get killed in front of you during war, or you've seen your buddy get killed in front of you in a neighborhood.
Right.
Post-traumatic stress, that never been addressed. And then you go on in life, and then you act out that. You know, you're something happens to you. You're not the way you were before. Something happens to you.
Well, there's psychological damage. As a result
of something happens to you, and then it shows up in your life in some way.
Right. Could it manifests itself in other ways.
Yeah, could be through anger. You could affect your family. You know, it's like you missed a part of growing up, and you don't know how to do that part unless you're taught.
Right.
And then you're lacking in that ability to do that part.
Well, that's what part of the drive and the push for reparations actually is. That is actually a component of it, is the fact that we have to acknowledge as a group and social class that we're damaged.
Exactly.
And that we are in need of repair and to be made whole again.
So these damaged people come out of slavery, they raise kids. Guess what they're going to do? How they're going to discipline their kids? Like they got disciplined.
Right.
Not time out in the corner.
No time out.
Ain't no time out in the corner. They take whatever they can get, a switch, a belt, a board, a cord, whatever, to discipline you. And that's how they got disciplined. And that'll make you not do what they don't want you to do.
Well, it's a technique that actually is part of law enforcement training.
There you go.
It's called pain compliance.
That's it.
If you are feeling an amount of pain.
Okay, if I break your arm.
Yep. If you feel pain, it's going to get you to stop.
Get you to
resisting. It's supposed to.
Yeah.
Right? So.
But see, that's all we know because we're primitive. We're primitive. That's how you get people to comply.
Right.
You're primitive. You use force, you use physical force to get people to comply. So, I mean, to me, that's it. To me, that carries on through the generations. Okay. So if I beat the hell out of my kids right now and they grow up and have kids, guess what they're going to do to their kids? They're going to beat the hell out of their kids. Unless you teach them something different on discipline.
Right.
And then their kids are going to beat the hell out of their kids and so on and so forth. So,
right.
I mean, and then not only that, it depends on the person's mind where they're going to break a certain point, i.e. shootings at schools, shootings at workplaces, shootings at, you know, violence, basically violence. So we are the most violent people on earth.
Well, that's the foundation of what founded this country.
Yeah, yeah.
It was founded on violence and war and hey man,
yeah.
It was founded on war and conquest.
Mm-hmm.
It was founded on war, you know, battles, conquest, dominance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. And self-righteousness.
So. Now that you said that, think about them giving in on reparations. Think about that. Do you think they will ever, if that is the core of why they are where they are, what do you think about, would you think they would want to give reparations?
I don't really I don't really give a damn about what they think about it. It's not about, it's not a matter. When this first came up as a topic of conversation with somebody else, that I had a conversation with somebody else, they said, oh, you know they never give that to us. It's not about them giving a shit.
Right. Well, we can take it, but it has to be by force.
And that's the way the system is set up.
It's going to have to be by bloodshed. That's the only way you can do it.
Now, we're not calling for that today. We're not calling for anything anarchist today, just to be clear.
Look at all the revolutions in the past. Look at how people got what they got in the past. Think about this, because I'm a history buff.
I'm glad.
Everything I read, American history, Western civilization, anything Europe, you know, everybody fight and win, and they take. Fight, kill, take, and then call it theirs. And that's exactly what happened here. So, you know, it's part of the human condition.
Well, it depends. It depends on what civilizational aspect involving, you know, historic origins. I mean, if we're looking at ancient origins prior to, you know, prior to slavery being instituted as in this, you know, here in the States, if we're looking at an African or even a Kemetic existence, from what I've learned is that it wasn't about pillaging and conquest. It was more about cooperation. It was more spiritual. It was less about domination and control. And it was more about, I guess, tribalism, if anything. And even that ushered in a spirit of cooperation among the tribes, because it was, you know, you're talking about a landmass that was so huge that has 50 some odd countries in it now, you know, what, 54 countries in Africa.
Yeah.
And all, you know, you had so much space, and then you had different countries that actually had to peacefully exist with one another.
And resources.
You're right.
Battle for resources.
Right. And it wasn't until the European invasion and all these the other mindsets and precepts that exist within their culture that invaded the continent of Africa and certain a number of different countries and stole and pillaged their resources, including the bodies of the people there. So you have to think how someone is. I mean, some people have tended to believe that we are obviously, well, we're the original man, and at some point, the Neanderthal existence was considered inferior.
Right.
You know, whether genetically, you know, they're genetically inferior by the fact that they're lacking of melanin.
Right.
By things that are lacking within their genetic code that make them inferior. So, of course, they had to mount up. Knowing that they're in themselves that they're inferior, they had to mount up and exact control over others.
Yeah.
I mean, it gets deep, man. I mean,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Without being too profound here on a Sunday afternoon, man, it's just.
we're dropping, you know, this is a lot of stuff that's not being told. It's not even spoken of. Maybe in quiet, maybe in private, and, you know, a lot of things are going on. Now, you know, I know people say, well, you got to prove it. You got to show your proof. The things that you say are true. You got to show proof. Case in point, this last verdict Manafort got.
Yeah, Paul Manafort.
Now,
let me pull that up. Go ahead.
Yeah. And then there was a young lady who did the voter fraud.
Yes. I'm somewhat familiar about that.
And got 5 years in prison.
Right.
And you look at that, you look at cases like that, and you wonder, okay, this system is... It can be pliable like clay. We can make this stick over here for this person and then give this person the maximum penalty of the max penalty.
Mic turned off.
Right? Life in jail for, you know, having a few ounces of marijuana in your car. You know, life in prison. You know, and then you got subjective folks giving these decisions, namely judges and juries giving these outrageous recommendations of punishment. Because let's say an all-white jury, you got a black man who has been accused of raping a white woman with no evidence. That chances are that white jury is going to convict that black man because he's black and it was a white woman. And then chances are they're going to give him the maximum penalty they can, which is life in prison, okay, which anyone else would have got the same, not verdict or the same sentence. And it goes to show that, you know, the system is designed to fit certain people and not others.
Well, it's been demonstrated time and time again throughout the decades and, you know, hundreds of years that justice is not equal.
No.
And this being an example, a most recent example of it with,
yeah.
I mean, the Paul Manafort case versus, you know, this woman's case in out of Fort Worth, which is in Tarrant County.
Yeah.
Matter of fact,
she should be punished for that crime. Okay.
Well, the way I understand it, she was on probation. She was serving a probation term. And I believe it was a supervised probation, if not a summary probation. The difference being one is supervisory, one is not supervisory. You just have to, you know, come in and make sure that you're honoring the terms. But she apparently, you know, it was in 2016 when Trump was coming into office, and a family member, I guess her mom or what have you, was telling her how, you know, important it was to vote, you know, in this particular election.
Right.
So she felt compelled to vote.
Mm-hmm.
But she overlooked the fact that she was ineligible to vote because of her probationary status.
Right.
Honest mistake.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel it was anything deliberate.
No.
I mean, behind it, there wasn't anything to say that she, you know, contrived or purposely, you know, was trying to circumvent the system just to, you know, do her part, I guess, if you will. It's minuscule by comparison to me. Yet it was made into such a big deal. It was highlighted, you know, as if she basically stepped on some baby's head or something, the way they make it in the press. But we already know what the press is. We already know that. That's a given that basically they're a propaganda machine, right?
I like to know who pled her case, her defense.
Oh, that was I'm kind of familiar with the area, but let me just say this: it's one of the attorneys that that we see in the Dallas-Fort Worth area constantly.
Right.
Her name escapes me right now, mm-hmm. but she's been involved in a number of different cases over the past few years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that she did not mount a defense, but if she was representing me, I'd be pretty pissed.
Yeah, I would be very. I'll be like, wait a minute now. You're fired. I need a new attorney for this case. And but I mean, it's sad that you see the sentencing. You know, it depends on who's doing it, who's the defendant, and where the justice system is going to go. Manafort came in the court in a wheelchair, which I know damn well he'd been walking everywhere else. And all of a sudden, he's sick and he can't walk and he's got a cane. And, you know, you got to play them games to get on the mercy of the court. And that's exactly what he did. So the sentencing guidelines, I think it was from 19 to 25 years for the crimes he committed.
Correct.
And that was the max. But the judge is like, oh, that's too much. You know, for a 69-year-old man, we're going to give him 47 months.
Well, I haven't confirmed it yet, but it turns out, hold on, I'm trying to find it. I think the judge in this case was black. The Manafort.
Well, still, I mean, he was a conservative.
Right.
He was conservative. Right. He said it to start off. Matter of fact, when this case started, he mentioned about the he mentioned about the Russia investigation. He brought that part up.
Right.
I don't even know that was part of the litigation. He brought that up out of nowhere. So even if it's not in litigation, you bring it up out of nowhere, obviously you're a little biased right there.
Oh, from the get-go.
From the get-go. So from that, when they said 19 to 25 years, knowing this judge and what he said in the beginning, I guarantee you he's not going to get nothing nowhere near that, and that's exactly what happened.
Well, even if he did get some time, it'll be at a club fed.
Yeah. I wish I could roll into court. If I do something wrong, roll into court in a wheelchair and bend over like I'm sick, about to fall over, and give the mercy of the court and do my little speech and don't show no remorse for what I've done.
Right.
And get as little time as he got.
Right.
Yeah.
I just found the story. It's loading up right now.
I'm also looking at one. There was a homeless man, and this is in the same area. Homeless man with lengthy criminal history accused of voter fraud in Fort Worth. And this guy was a 50-year-old homeless man with a lengthy criminal record. I mean, you may have come across it in searching.
I think there was a woman, another female that got
caught up. Well, this is a different case. Now, they said that it says after an investigation into an alleged voter fraud ring, kind of something with Trump was saying, well, there's been about 3 million fraud, illegal votes out there. And when I got voted in and, Hillary won 3 million more, that was, of course they couldn't find that they were illegal.
Right.
Squash that. But yeah, I'm looking at a different one here. This one's says Charles Nathan Jackson, who was booked into and then released from the Tarrant County Jail this month. And this was back in November.
Indicted
on a charge of providing false information on a voting application.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Texas throw the book at you.
Oh yeah.
Okay, you trying to cheat us out of vote? Throw his butt in jail. Let me see. I'm trying to see what the verdict was, if they had any.
Well, they're just now getting around to letting people loose on tickets for joints. If you get stopped to have a joint in your car, they run you to jail out here.
Yeah, I believe it.
Well, they're just now getting around to not doing that anymore.
Yeah.
They're writing field release citations.
So what's the latest? There in Texas, what's the latest on marijuana making it legal? Have you heard anything?
There's still some resistance to it. Just from my take on it so far, there's still some resistance, but there's pockets of different areas, like in Austin, that it's legal. It's got to be. Of course, there's no THC composition a part of it at all. It's all about the oil. It's still.
Mm-hmm.
In its beginning stages, it's still going to be a hard fight, because even a jurisdiction relatively close to here, I believe Grand Prairie, is really fighting against it. They don't want anything to do at all. And I think Arlington is the same way. A lot of these little cities out here are really dead set against anything having to do with it being a business.
Even if it's medical.
Even if it's medicinal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still out there.
Yeah.
And there's news items that I'm seeing pop up that aren't helping it. I mean, there were these officers in St. Louis, I believe it was, somewhere in Missouri.
Yeah.
Apparently, there was a gentleman that was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. Same thing that Alex Trebek was recently diagnosed with, by the way.
Yeah.
This man was, in his hospital bed and was a part of a social media group, I think, and was on Facebook Live or something at the time. And he wasn't even doing anything, but at some point the police were called there to his hospital room, and they conducted a search of his room looking for bags of marijuana. Yeah.
They found anything?
No, they found nothing. So it's just this,
I don't know. Somebody dropped a dime on him. Somebody was trying to get at him. And just the call itself is prejudicial. It would be a prejudicial against him. So no matter what, it don't even have to be true. Now that's a stigma with him now.
Yeah. Well, he's got terminal cancer unless he's able to get it in remission. I mean, you know.
But see, not only that, if he passes away, now that's going to be his legacy.
Wow.
That's what they're going to know him for.
Wow. You mean when he passes away,
you know what I'm saying?
Legacy.
Just the accusation. Just the accusation.
And that was
so if they look up, yeah, I'm sure he's going to be in a paper. You can Google him now, and it's known with marijuana, whether he was guilty or not.
Dude.
That's how the government works, man. That's how it works. You know, if you get booked, you know about this.
Yes.
You get booked. You're on file now.
Yeah.
So now that's in your jacket.
That's why I don't want anything to do with the system.
Right.
Especially that aspect. I don't even want the police fucking called on me right now. And I used to be one.
Yeah.
I'm
you
sick.
A lot of people can tell that.
Yes.
Preach that. Yeah.
I'm a compensated fucking pensioner, and I don't want the police called for anything. I don't want to be near them. I don't want them in my proximity. I don't want to be, definitely don't want to be responsible to be the one that they're being called on.
Right.
That upsets me more than anything is the fact the mere presence is just a stressor for me.
It is.
And I'm a law abiding citizen. The only thing I probably do is drive like an asshole every once in a while.
Even an accusation.
Oh my God.
Just an accusation, man. Once you plant a seed, once you ring a bell, you can't unring a bell. You can't unring a bell, man.
Yep.
You can apologize all you want, but guess what? You're known for that now. That's your reputation
That's your rep.
Your reputation, now you're a drug head, whether you did it or not.
I knew that from prior experience.
Yeah.
Experience that I've had of being in the field where you go to somebody's house, and just the appearance of the house itself, people will draw conclusions. And if God forbid, if you went to the house more than once in the same shift, the same week, the same month, the same several months, that house becomes known as a problem situation in that area.
You're building a reputation now.
Right. Reputation. It's on record.
We've been out here three or four times.
Yep.
Or calls come to this house. So now the people in the neighborhood, you already got a rep with them now because the cops is at your house all the time.
They see that.
Yeah. So it's so easy. It's so easy.
It's too easy. It's easy. It's easier if you're black.
Yeah. So easy. Yeah.
You know, it's easier if you're black. It's just more. It's hard living this life, man, every day. I mean, people think, oh, man, you're just being paranoid. You're being overly sensitive.
Well.
And I say no. I'm being prepared.
So when you think about, and I thought about this too, you know, all the shootings we've had, all the school shootings, all of the mass shootings, you know, Las Vegas,
yeah,
Parkland.
Yeah.
What's the nightclub in Orlando?
Right.
That type of thing.
Right.
And depends on who's in a legislative branch and who's in the executive branch. Will anything get done? You can probably sign a petition with thousands and thousands, maybe millions of names. And to what effect will that do to public officials? Like you say, your public officials only act when money's involved.
Right.
And I know that for a fact. And that's the sad part, you know. You know, when we're growing up, you're young, you don't think about stuff like this.
No.
You just live in the world, everything's, you know, you're trying to have fun, you're doing kid things, you're doing, you know, young adult, teenage things, and you're doing young adult things, and then you get to a certain point, you're starting to see these different things that we're talking about jumping off and how they've always been there, even when we're little.
Right.
But you didn't see it then.
No.
Because this wasn't ready yet. You were in a kid mind. You weren't about kid things, doing kid stuff.
Sure.
So now I want to say we're awake, even for the black perspective. We're awake now because we see a lot of lies that have been told. We saw a lot of things that have happened that we grew up with that are not true. Mm-hmm. And we kind of been going through the motions in this whole thing. So, and it's amazing. I think, sit back, I'm driving to work sometime, man. You know, I got an hour commute to work. And I'm thinking about stuff like this all the time. I'm like, how are we, you know, we've been kind of like either oblivious to this or we've just don't see it or we don't care. And I know some people my age right now, they just don't care. They don't even watch news. They don't want to know what's going on. I'm like, how do you stay blind intentionally like that? Intentionally, you know?
I think what it is a lot of us feel defeated. A lot of us probably feel like we can't measure up. We don't have the stamina to take up the fight. We don't feel the fight is worth it. We don't feel that there's a fight that needs to be done or carried out. I've even suggested to people that we are in a race war, but people are looking at me half, you know, with the stink eye, halfway crazy, you know, thinking that we're not. I think within our group as Generation Xers, giving away our age somewhat, I think we in this group, I know, at least for me, from my standpoint, we thought.
I am a baby boomer. Oh,
you're a boomer.
I'm right at the end, the last year of a baby boomers. I'm a baby boomer.
Well, how come y'all didn't do anything, man? Because we thought y'all did something to better our fucking condition. Y'all didn't do anything.
Do a damn thing.
Y'all baby boomers just said forget it.
So the jig is up here.
The jig is up. You are a boomer then.
Look, I'm down with the cause. And you know, I don't care when you're born, man. You see all this crap.
No. You have to understand. I only speak that from the standpoint of a larger dynamic.
Yeah.
When I grew up, I was thinking, okay, everything was cool. And we were told that. We were assured that, you know, they marched for civil rights, even though they got bit by dogs and all this stuff. You know, even all of our leaders got killed. There's no need to become radical or quote-unquote radical or extreme anyway, because everything is taken care of. We're cool. We got affirmative action. We got Michael Jackson is selling records. And, you know, we learned how to break dance and we invented hip hop. So everything's going to be okay. You know, we got rocket ships that can fly like airplanes and go and come back. So, you know, we grew up. Yeah. We grew up thinking, at least where I went to school in my friend set, that everything was cool. We could just be laid back, go to the military if we choose to, or just go straight to college. Everything would be okay. There was no such thing as the enormity of student loan debt.
Right.
There was no such thing back then, you know, that what we're dealing with now as, you know, I mean, there was inflation and everything else in that. But a lot of the instruments that are in place right now where you're barely getting by didn't seem to exist back then. But I was probably blind to it because everything was cared for. I was a kid. But when I worked a few jobs throughout my life, went through a career, did quote-unquote everything right. Yeah. When I did everything right, joined the service, got out of service, worked. Yeah, went, followed the rules for the most part, played the game for the most part. didn't make myself too much of a spectacle for the most part.
Out of
what was considered trouble. But when I go to speak up and start pointing out certain things, because I was always conscious, even when I got like to my 20s, my early 20s, I always had a consciousness. Mm-hmm. But I knew I had to play the game. I had to rotate to the existing dictates in order to somehow make it to a level to where I could you know, get a house, start a family, and basically be left the hell alone. Right? But what they don't tell you is about this thing called wealth disparity between whites and blacks.
Yeah.
What they don't tell you is about racial profiling that affects black men. What they don't tell you is about this disenfranchisement. Mm-hmm. And you don't learn all this until you worked a career, been through some things, hopefully without being incarcerated. Right. And you end up at age 40-something, 50-something. And there's some self-realization that takes place, and the consciousness is kicked up a notch.
That's when it really kicks in, man. I mean, even for me, that's kind of when, okay, my eyes are opening now. I can see these things that we're talking about. And that's what I was saying. When we were growing up, we didn't see a lot of these things that we're seeing and we're feeling right now.
That's right.
Yeah, we're older and we're more wiser. And we're researching more when we didn't do as much then to find out these facts we found out. So, and that's, it's almost like, I want to always use the Matrix as kind of a, this is where we are.
Right.
We've been plugged in, we've been doing everything they want us to do, and all of a sudden we get unplugged. Now we see the real world.
Right.
Now we see the things that's been the blinders are off now. We see the real what's going on.
Right. You know? Right.
And I'd say my demarcation was like right after I retired. I was 45, 46. Mm-hmm. And you start to see that, you know, all these things, and then you learn about all these atrocities that have happened, you know, not even 100 years ago. I mean, recent history.
Right.
You know, going to, you know, Tulsa riots. Going there and just...
Well, 1921, Tulsa Massacre.
Well, and go in and kill a bunch of people and kill and pillage and rape and kill.
Do you understand that was the first time the United States military used a bomb from a plane?
Bombed, was the name of the place. I went there back a couple of years ago, about 3 years ago, went there with a friend, and I saw the monument there.
Yeah, I was there. Yeah, I was there too. Greenwood. I've been there before.
Greenwood.
Yeah.
And I brought a brochure back, actually a book about the whole event, and read that thing, man. And they had that place was nice, dude. I mean,
oh, I know.
Wealthy folks was there, and
that would be
my folks came in there, and it wasn't doing so good then.
Yeah.
My folks went in there. All they needed was to make up something. Somebody did, you know, you owe me money or you looked at my woman wrong. That's all it took. You just need a little spark. You get mobs come in and they just come in, shoot people on the street.
I only chuckle because I'm seeing you on video and I'm like, yeah, it's nervous laughter, man. And I don't mean to make light of this at all. I've been on the ground there before, right there at Greenwood, Archer, and Pine, right there in Tulsa.
Yes.
And I actually had the unique opportunity of talking to one of the few, if not the only, black business owner at one of the stores I popped my head into.
Yeah.
And I spoke to her for a few minutes, and she was basically trying to appeal, not to me, but just to people in general. She was saying that I wish we would get more black interest in this area and get some actual businesses back in here again, right here. in this area right here on Tulsa, Green Archer and Pine.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, do you see that baseball stadium mm-hmm. over there? That minor league baseball stadium?
Yeah.
And that
matter of fact, I went to the, they had a memorial there. It was like a little park. It was yeah. really nice.
Yeah.
And they have statues and they had the name plaques talking about that particular area. And guess what? You read those plaques.
Yeah.
You read those plaques.
I did.
It did not discredit any white person.
No, not at all. It sure didn't.
They whitewashed it. That's what upset me when I went there and read that stuff. I'm like,
man,
that really upset me. And I was like, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to wow. go. Tulsa race riots of 1921 took place on May 31st and June 1st, 1921, when mob of whites attacked black residents and businesses of the Greenwood District in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's considered one of the worst incidents of racial violence in the history of the United States.
Yeah.
Now, racial violence, I'm gonna call it white violence.
That was a massacre. That's what that was.
That was a white massacre.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That was no racial to it. You didn't like what black people, affluent black people, mm-hmm. businesses doing well. In yep. 1921, obviously you weren't doing too well because you had to come in there and kill a bunch of people to take what you want.
Well, they were doing well on their own without needing anybody else. They were yeah. they were essentially what would be considered as being separatist, which was not a problem. That's where this can also lead into a discussion of how integration has failed us. Integration as an actual instrument has been a failure.
Yes.
That part of mm-hmm. Tulsa, Oklahoma was intensely successful. And what was moving to me was at my feet, standing on the sidewalk, I'm seeing these plaques of these different business names, mm-hmm. what they were.
Yeah.
And I'm talking like.
I took pictures of those.
I did too. Yeah.
I got them
somewhere. I think I got them in my gallery. Yeah. Yeah. But it was disheartening. It was a very sobering experience. I went there during the daytime, and I was there alone, and mm-hmm. I was standing, and it was sometime during the midday, during the middle of the week, and I'm standing there and just taking it all in, and I mm-hmm. swear I felt it down to my soul.
You feel it? Yeah, you can feel it, man. It's like those spirits are still there, and you know.
You better believe me.
You know, and then just to read, to me, what's most upsetting to read those plaques and how they were rushed. You know, that was another one of many atrocities that happened. I mean, man, there's so many of them. There's a lot of them in Texas, dude.
Yeah, that's what I've come to know in recent years.
Yeah, I mean, I think I sent you. I'm trying to make it 19. Was it 1910? And I had the book too. I read most of the book on how they like police killings mm-hmm. justify why they kill people.
Oh, sure.
You are a threat in your black skin.
Definitely.
So I can shoot you and kill you. Okay. Mm-hmm. More so than a white person being a threat. White person will walk right up to you and take him down and take him to jail.
Sure.
No, if I walk up to him with a knife, my ass is full of holes, okay? Full of bullet holes. So that is the norm now.
Well, we all know it's a two-tiered system.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's not just the haves and the have-nots. It's predicated right. on your racial background. It's predicated on the fact mm-hmm. if you're black or not.
Yeah. I'm even looking at the pictures of the burned out buildings on Tulsa. Here.
Yeah, in Tulsa.
This one's on look like Huffington Post did a spread on it, and they're showing the original photos of a lot of the burned out buildings, the white mobs taking black prisoners, let's see, African-American detainees stand among armed whites at it. You know, digital scan of a postcard image of the Tulsa race riot shows black prisoners being marched to gunpoint. Now, let me ask you this. Why would they be black prisoners and not white prisoners? You came into my neighborhood, burned everything down, shot and killed everybody, but you're going to pull out black prisoners. Well, no whites held prisoner by any law enforcement.
They didn't belong there. They didn't belong there. It's that simple. They didn't. Yeah. They weren't regarded as belonging there. They were what do you call interlopers? They were invaders. They encroached. They weren't supposed to be there. They didn't want them there.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. They were in their own neighborhood, dude. They're in their own neighborhood. So you came into my neighborhood and shot and killed and burned and pillaged and stole in my neighborhood. It was all economics, dog. It was all economics.
Well, yeah.
That was a, let's just say, government-sanctioned robbery.
Well, just like they robbed the Freedmen banks, all the Freedmen.
Assault and murder.
Where's all the money from that was in the Freedmen banks? You can't tell me that the people that ran those banks absconded with the money.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I see the images. Okay.
Yeah. So I mean, just going through that, man. This is, I mean, you're searching a black person, so that person won't be a threat to us white folks.
Well, you understand how that story started, right?
You understand how that started. Go ahead.
Well, there was a pretty much like what happened with Emmett Till. There was a story that was concocted involving basically what it amounted to was white fragility.
Yes.
There was basically this false narrative of a woman being raped by this beastly black man.
Yeah. That's all you got to say.
All you got to say. They ran with it.
You don't even have to have proof. You just say it. The accusation says it all.
And the story was made up. The story was made up completely. Yeah. And they ended up burning down the whole damn place and killing a bunch of people, a bunch of black people that occupied that location.
Okay, here, I'm going to read. There's an excerpt here. I don't know if you saw it. It's probably on that same page. It says May 30th, 1920, a 19-year-old black shoe shine man named Nick Dick Roland entered the Drexel building downtown to use the segregated restroom while approaching the elevator, which apparently hadn't stopped.
Yeah, there you go.
Evenly on the floor, Roland tripped and fell on the operator, 17-year-old white girl named Sarah Page. The girl screamed, drawing attention of onlookers who yelled rape.
Rape. That's all I need, just that four-letter word. and hundreds were killed. People were just, you know, hundreds of the residents were displaced. Businesses were destroyed, decimated.
Yeah. Yeah, but check this out, dude. This is what the Red Cross reported. Red Cross said there were only 36 deaths.
They originally reported. Yeah. It says initial reports say over 800 people were injured, around 35 people died.
Yeah.
Although in a more recent investigation into the case.
1921 findings, total unknown according to the Red Cross.
Looking at upwards of 300 according to the Tulsa Riot Commission.
And mind you, use government aircraft covered up.
Well, that's and also we're talking about Red Cross here, right? What's Red Cross?
Yeah. You're right. Yeah, I already knew that. I mean, I'm with you, bro.
I used to be a supporter of Red Cross, so I thought they're corrupt.
What truth should we give to that, right? what should we believe, right? Yeah, man. So, you know, yeah. only the victors can tell their own story.
That's true.
Can set history.
So now now we know the history, right? We know the history. Yeah. We know. We have an understanding, a logical understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's all that's gone on and how we are in the pickle that we're in.
Yeah.
I guess the question should come up at some point, what are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
You know,
that's the dilemma.
Yeah.
Because that question's been asked, I don't know how many times. So I don't know how many times I've heard that question. Even when my dad was, when I was little, us four sit in the back seat, and my dad spoke like this.
Wow.
And he said the exact same thing. And I'm 54 years old right now, and we're asking the same question.
The baby boomers started 54. Let me look that up.
Baby boomers ended.
I mean, I started. Yeah, let me hold on a second. I'm not just being. Well, go ahead, but that's what your dad was.
And this was in the 70s. I mean, I was little. I was probably in 6, 7, 8 years old, maybe. You know.
Oh man.
I had in the back seat of the car, me and my other three siblings sitting in the back, and he and my mom would be in the front seat talking about stuff like this.
Right.
And then the question would be, when are we going to get it together? What are we going to do about this?
Good question. Wow. When are we going to get it together?
I'm sure that a lot of people ask that same question. And guess what? A lot of people are still asking that same question to this day.
I think what it is, we don't feel that we're equipped to come up with a solution. And the fact is, it requires doing research and creating some sort of collective.
Yeah.
You know, creating you hear it all the time on some of these people that are content creators,
mm-hmm.
more experienced than myself, because I don't necessarily consider myself a leader or a content creator, but someday I might, who knows. But, you know, we got people out there that say we're just not on code. And then people don't know what being on code is.
Mm-hmm.
And just what I've been studying so far, there are 9 areas of activity occurring among people. And all that has racism, white supremacy infused within it.
Yes.
And I think as long as we understand that, that can be a start.
Mm-hmm.
Because the other side has a code. They have their code.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've shared this with a few people before. And as a matter of fact, a few people I've shared it with, they don't even know what this is.
Yes.
It's the code of 14 words.
14 words. Yep.
It's the mm-hmm. code of 14 words. Basically, they work towards the purity of their race.
Yes.
They do everything that they can within their power to work towards the purity of their own race. But if I were to come up and advance that particular code or ethos, I'd be considered divisive and a separatist and possibly an extremist. Yeah, I use the word.
Yep. You'll be one of those on that list.
One of those agitators, one of those uppity Negroes.
Yep. You'll be on that list. We must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. 14 words.
Yes, sir. So what we need to do, I believe, is adopt some sort of practice, not to mirror what that is, but we need to adopt some sort of practice to commit ourselves to a specific code of conduct.
Yeah.
Instead of putting emphasis on instead of putting emphasis on entertainment and sports, we need to put emphasis on the fact that we are, you know, our future existence depends on this. I mean, in looking at it from a socioeconomic standpoint, which I always draw to because it's statistical, it's got empirical data.
Yeah.
By 2053, our median wealth is going to be negligible at best. And I'm not trying to be in everybody's pocket, but... Right. Like I've mentioned earlier, money moves things.
Right.
You can't do anything without money. You can't move. Nothing can happen. Nothing happens without money. And because with money comes power and influence.
Right.
And that's what we don't seem to get. And we need that group. We need that shifted to a group dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
14, 22. Hey, check this out. I'm reading, this is Wikipedia though.
Yeah.
On 14 words. Let's see. You know, they had a plot to assassinate Barack Obama.
Oh, man.
1488 numerology was symbolically included in the Barack Obama assassination plot in October 2008. Both Nazis, Schleitzelman, and Colbert were introduced to each other online by a mutual friend who shared their white supremacist beliefs. Within a month of meeting, they had planned to kill the Democratic Party nominee by driving at their target and shooting from their vehicle. Mm-hmm. This was to be followed by a killing spree in which the men planned to kill 88 African Americans, 14 of whom were to be beheaded. They were targeting mostly children at an unidentified, predominantly black school.
Wow.
Shortly after their arrest, their vehicle was discovered to have 14 and 88 written onto it. This is part of that 14 words, those people who, and this was a plot to get him in Tennessee. And there was a main article to this, but that was just an excerpt from the article, which is on Wikipedia.
Well,
you were saying 14 words, I pulled it up.
Yeah.
And just happened to be skimming through this, and then it came up with that, Barack Obama. And that's the Charleston church shooting. After
right.
The Charleston mass murder shooting in 2015, Dylan Root's ideology, an apparent manifesto emerged in the media with mm-hmm. multiple references to 1488. Now, yep. 1488, that's those numbers again.
Yep.
These included several photos of Ruth pictured alongside the numbers.
Right.
He symbolically brought 88 bullets to the Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church to carry out the shooting, in which 9 African Americans were killed.
Well, 88 signifies the eighth letter of the alphabet. Pays homage to Adolf Hitler. Sieg Heil and the Third Reich.
Yep.
So, and then you throw the 14 in there. Their 14 is code. So,
right.
if they're rocking, you see somebody rocking in the 1488. You know what they represent, straight up.
Yep.
There's no dispute about it.
Yep.
You know, you bring up the manifesto and stuff like that from him, and you understand that there's, and I have it posted on my blog, the cogenovist.com. Mm-hmm. I have it posted up. There's about ethnic cleansing operations. There was a book that was released and distributed a few years ago, and
mm-hmm.
it is FM6-2003, and it's entitled Ethnic Cleansing Operations. And I downloaded the document.
Say it again, FM?
Yeah, FM, F as in Frank, M as in Mary.
Uh-huh.
Number 6-2003.
Okay.
Ethnic cleansing operations.
Yeah.
All right. What it's going to do is going to take you to a, you have a choice of opening it up using whatever document opener.
It's a PDF. Yeah,
it's a PDF. And there's and it's available in full text, which I find is a trip that is available in full text even to this day.
Yeah.
But
wow.
I won't read you the whole thing right now because it's several pages, but I will point out some significant.
I'm downloading it.
Yeah. There are some items of relevance that were here. I mean, it has different locations listed, different asset locations. Broken down and listed. Different bus stations, military installations, et cetera, et cetera. Let me see something. It says, well, I'll just start reading it from the beginning. It shows you how dynamic of a works this is. Apparently it was published, written in July 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Not copyrighted, distributed widely. It says, and I quote, "In this war, your uniform will be your skin and you cannot take it off."
Mm.
And the author has yet to be identified.
The author. Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, it's heavy, man. And I've scanned through it before, and it's just mind blowing that and to realize that people don't realize that this exists.
Yeah.
This is something that's on at your fingertips that you can download and look at. And it's real. It's very real. It's not some, you know, at first I thought it was some kind of movie script or something, mm-hmm. or some kind of movie prop, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's a damn manifesto, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right here in black and white.
Yep, with a nice fat Confederate flag in the middle there.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm scrolling through it, kind of. Yep. Black bodies dead. I'm on chapter one.
Okay.
First photo there.
But I have that posted up on my blog, and just mm-hmm. to, just for people to see it. Oh, here it is. It says about the author, but like I said, he's identified. I'm assuming it's a he. Let me pull up something. I was trying to pull something up in particular. Now, this page itself, it has a, let's see if I could zoom in. Yeah. All right, it says, I deeply regret being unable to reveal my identity to my reading audience, but the racial and political situation in the United States has become so dangerous that to do so would result in my death.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping my anonymity will allow me to write additional works to benefit the white race. What can be revealed is that I am a racially conscious, college-educated white man and a military veteran. I have served with honor in militia organizations, entering as a low-level officer and working my way up to the rank of general. In addition to planning and directing large field exercises, I was the director of classroom instruction of a large underground militia for over a decade. My topics of instruction included strategic planning, tactical operations, logistics, high-tech communications, and combined arms operations. This manual is a result of more than three decades of research and experience. I trust that the readers of this manual will copy and share it with every racially conscious white person they know. I encourage you to not only copy this book onto compact discs, but you know, CDs, but also to post it on your websites where it can be downloaded at no charge. God bless the white race, July 4th, 2003.
Mm.
That's from the book itself, from page 142.
Mm.
And people don't know that this exists, bro. They don't know that it's out there. So I wrote a kind of a brief blog on it. I don't think I did a podcast on it. Well, I did do a podcast on it. Yes, it was brief. Like, it's something I kind of threw together. And it's going to be something that I'm probably going to comment on again after I really kind of break down the book and read it. But it's there in black and white, man. And I submit to you, and it's not a far-fetched notion to consider that there are sleeper cells out and about.
Yeah.
Not a matter of if, but it's a matter of when.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Something else, huh?
I'm just reading experts here and there. I'm kind of scrolling through, reading the caption of the photos, the different photos here.
Oh yeah, there are photos in the book, right?
Yeah. Yep. So. Matter of fact, they had a photo of that was in the Tulsa riot there, mm-hmm. back of where they were holding black men in the back of that truck, flatbed truck. And again, I say black prisoners.
Yeah. Depending on what you believe, we're born into captivity already, bro, by the color of our skin.
Yeah.
We're born as prisoners of war, bro.
Mm-hmm.
We are born as prisoners of war. Flat out. You know? It's just not, mm-hmm. we're not in bondage yet. I mean, there's another level of it.
Yeah.
You know, by being incarcerated, because they want to either incarcerate you or you end up being a beta male.
Yeah.
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, to each their own, though. But you're castigated if you're an alpha male, right?
Yeah.
Especially being black. Being a black mm-hmm. alpha male is not the way to be nowadays. The way to kind of typecast it.
Right.
That's why you I don't mean to segue into another topic, but that's why you have guys appearing in tux dresses at the Oscars.
Black. Yep. Exactly.
They're trying to water us down, man. They're trying to diminish our significance in this culture because we build the potential of too much power.
Yep. Well, yeah, man. So this thing looks very dismal, and I'm going to shut it down. Very dismal. Yep. I mean, I just downloaded it, and I'll look at it another time.
No. That's the reality, man. I mean, yeah. It's not going to be all sunshine and rose petals.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. That's what we deal with here on the Cogenitivist Chronicles, man. We deal with the realities and we deal with what we think is truth and what's factual. So,
mm-hmm.
You know.
Oh, did you get?
Gotta get honest.
Did you download the Party Hardy?
Yeah, I did.
Party B, sound file.
Yes, I did. All right, hold on a second. Let me go ahead and close.
I was sitting laughing. I was sitting doing my headphones, and my coworker like, "What you laughing at?" You know.